Here we are again with one of these strange ancient tales. And with all the... What's the point, you might even be asking? Why take the time with these old mythic, magic, superstitious tales? One, I think, by revisiting those things which people have refused to forget, we help take ourselves outside of the, what I would call the anti-historical nature of modern life, where things aren't remembered for 3 days or 3 months, let alone for 3,000 years. And also, to help get out of our heads, we sometimes want to jump into one of these stories so that we can deal with metaphor and story in a different way, not getting caught in whether or not this, of course, ever really happened. But to place ourselves into the tale, to cut the folk who wrote this and passed it on to us enough credit, they were Homo sapiens too. And they had something to say about what the struggle to be a person is. And it works for us today. Plus, I find some of these ancient tales, this one in particular, so rich, it could be revisited again and again. There are sermons in that short story I told our kids about family responsibility, forgiveness, prayer, suffering, about what it means to become a people, about what happens when you're lying awake at night alone and you can't sleep, about the inability to name the divine, about doubt and fear, about holding on and letting go, and most of all, about humility. And I'm going to do my darn best not to try and preach all of those sermons this morning. But they all speak together of the struggle that we experience to live a spiritual life and to be a people. And for me, the key point that we'll spend time with is that that struggle is relieved by and results in humility. Two ways to approach this story, as I said, either as the struggle of a person, an inner struggle of conscience. It is also about being a people. And what does it mean to struggle and unfold and know what we want to be as a people? And the way to get into these stories often, at least that was recommended to me, is to put yourself in the story. Think I'm Jacob now. Rabbi George Gittleman from Shamre Torah, he and I were talking recently about getting into the stories this way, and he said, oh sure, if you have anybody who needs to relate to a dysfunctional family, you can do no better than the book of Genesis. Thievery and trickery and lying. How interesting that the patriarchs, the people that this people, the Israelites, said, here's where we come from, again and again, are the person on the second who shouldn't get the reward. It's the sneaky person. It's the wounded person. It's the wrong wife, whatever it is. And that's one thing I quite love about this. There's an awareness of human weakness in it. The fact is, up until right about now, Jacob's a little bit of a jerk, which means I can relate, Not necessarily stealing my brother's birthright, but trying to get ahead, trying to outwit the world, always trying to find the angle that can be worked, maybe trying to take the easy way out. We're all conscious of these tendencies in ourselves. Here we've got Jacob now fleeing his brother. He has to go and live with his uncle for 20 years. Along the way, the other side of this story is, of course, Jacob's ladder. He's lost in the desert. He's by himself. He lays down. He just puts a rock on the ground and puts his head upon it. And somehow that night, he has an amazing vision. Angels coming and going, the whole connectedness of the universe. And he says, quite famously, I can't believe it. God is right here. I had no idea. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. But in this place, in this loneliness, in this lostness, I also received this vision. But Jacob's still a child in his way. So at that stage in the story, what he does is he says, to Yahweh, who has said, given him a vision, said, I want to make you the ancestor of all of these great people and everything. And Jacob says, fine, I'll accept it. I'll let you be my God if you take good care of me. Well, it doesn't quite work that way in the world, if any of you have noticed yet. We can't outwit life. We can't outwit the world and what it's going to bring to us, no matter what. So he's a spiritual man, but he doesn't understand yet what the cost of that is going to be, what the price of really following is. So he gathers his wives, cheats his uncle for a few years. He works out this thing so he can steal some of his sheep and so forth. And finally, it's time to leave. He's going to go back to his homeland. He's got a bad relationship with his uncle. But to go back to where he came from means he has to face Esau, his twin. And that they are twins is no coincidence in the story, I think. Impetuous, outgoing Esau and cautious, calculating Jacob. Imagine having to go and confront the brother from whom you'd stolen everything 20 years ago. Maybe I don't have to ask you to imagine that. Maybe there's something in your own life. The lingering conflict, the burned bridge, the distant family member, the loved one that we've had a fight with, and that feeling of what it's going to take to go face to face and make things right. Now, the story's been seen as a metaphor, of course, for the moral struggle for our conscience, for how hard it is. Sometimes, not so much in this picture, but in the Delacroix one where the angel looks like it's barely even trying. It's like, yeah, go ahead, whatever, all good. I imagine Jacob trying to run away. He's sent across his wives, he's sent across everything he owns, he's going to have to go over there and face the music, and he's got one last, like, well, maybe never mind, you know. And what does he meet? You know, he meets his own soul. He meets his conscience, which quite interestingly will not give Jacob his name, but will give Jacob a new name. What happens as the result of this mighty struggle? He can get nowhere. Finally, daybreak is about to happen. This may just be old superstition. The angels and the magical spirits at the rivers and so forth were thought to only be able to come out at night. So it has to get on its way, and it needs to conclude its business with Jacob. They've been struggling all night long. The sun is about to rise, and somehow the being magically just reaches out and breaks Jacob's hip. And the lesson here, I think, is that the struggle does not end. Whether of conscience, whether of seeking forgiveness, whether of coming to know the divine, it does not end until we allow ourselves to be humbled and hurt and touched by it in a real way. To take it in its fullness that includes the hurt of the world, that includes the beloved grandfather that dies too young. And that dynamic of being willing to feel just how much it hurts, you know, to own, wow, I really did steal your birthright, sorry, that can really, really hurt. And so the tale is to be humbled, to be brought down, to be slowed down, to let the hurt of life in a little bit is actually the secret. But it comes with great struggle. Meditation, discipleship, prayer, leadership, getting it together, these things are hard. It's hard to be a spiritual person. It's hard to embrace life with the challenges that it presents to us. But it will eventually. If you don't think the spirit of life isn't going to take its toll on your hip, you're still too young. Secret is the pride that Jacob has been carrying all this time, his certainty that he can work his way out of it, that he can finagle things, but a point comes where he can run no longer. So it raises the question for me, in myself, for us as Unitarian Universalists, what are the prideful things we're carrying? What do we think we can outwit the world? When do we let our arrogance or our conniving or our smarts get in the way of the actual relationships that we need to have, of healing the rift with ourself and healing the rift with our brothers. The spiritual life is not easy. The Buddhist scriptures are boring and repetitive, as many of you know. But the only way we're going to find what they have to offer, the only way we're going to learn to talk to people for whom these stories are important, and the way we welcome it into ourselves is to face it, to struggle and chew, and then admit when we have been wrong, admit when we have been prideful, and engage again face to face. This long struggle culminates in a new name and a trip across the river and the very thing that Jacob might have never thought he was going to get. Esau forgives him. "Forget it," he says. Which makes me wonder, of course, as well, how much of the struggle that we do generate is strictly within ourselves. That maybe all we actually need to do is get across the river and have that conversation that we've been waiting to have perhaps all these years. If we are willing to face the struggles of the spiritual life, the slow work, the wrestling with ideas we don't understand, and the horrors of the world, and the actual people, the actual dysfunctional folks that we live with and love and have to work with, if we're willing to, in that struggle, then be humble, curious, slow, and then join together, then I believe all the blessings of life are ours for the taking. And like Jacob, who may have lost a leg, we gain our wings.